Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of KCBX and its team of program hosts. Today on Central Coast Voices, join host Mario Espinoza-Kulik as he speaks with Ted Malpass, a mobile health clinic manager at the Slow Nor Foundation. I want to invite you to listen, learn, and participate in our conversation today, Thursday between 1 and 2, and join the conversation and call in at 805-781-3875, or you can email your questions to us at voices@kcbx.org. And with that, let's join Mario and his guest. Over to you, Mario.
Thank you, Brad. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. My name is Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. The Central Coast is home to a network of healthcare leaders working to close equity gaps in access to care and health outcomes. Today's guest from the Noor Clinic has been instrumental in addressing care gaps in San Luis Obispo County by operating healthcare services that are free to patients regardless of documentation status or insurance. Joining me in the studio is Ted Malpass, manager of the Mobile Health Clinic. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome to Central Coast Voices. In this segment, we'd like to hear more about the personal and professional journeys of our guests. So if you would like to please inform us, what led you to manage the mobile health clinic? How did this all get started for you?
I think it really began with a way to have some self perseverance and self protection. I myself have been a type 1 diabetic since I was 2 years old and experienced what it meant to not have access to the healthcare that is needed. And with type 1 diabetes, it's a chronic disease where you are need uninterrupted access to certain medicines, providers, and healthcare services. And so I, through my journey, single mom working with two siblings, I had multiple times where my mom had to really compromise, whether it was rent, food, certain other things, to be able to provide the medicine I needed. And so kind of with that passion, I went to school in Santa Cruz and really tried to get involved with community and global health efforts. I started a chapter there that focused on really improving the licensing language for pharmaceuticals, biomedicine that came out of universities to become more accessible and affordable. And then from there, I came to Slo County after meeting somebody in Santa Cruz, and she grew up here. And you know, one thing led to another, and I was exploring the community looking for a way to get involved and really contribute the passion I had for health access. And I had multiple people tell me, hey, you should check out Slo Nor, check out Slo Nor. And it went from a volunteer application to doing some outreach for them. And then the mobile health clinic manager role opened. I stepped into that and have been managing the program since its start a little over a year ago.
Wonderful. Congratulations. And what does that look like? What does the day-to-day operation of a manager of a mobile health clinic look like?
Yeah, I'm sure it differs all over just because, the healthcare landscape is not a freeway. It is more of a LA intersection with so many turns and that kind of thing. But for at least at Slo Nor, it's a lot of kind of, initially we were very strategic about, the county put up a CHIP report, a community health improvement plan, where they collected a bunch of surveys from Slo County residents about, what are their health needs? Where are these health gaps? And one of the biggest identified health barriers was geography, just, being in a very rural area, mm-hmm. over the grade, down in Napomo, kind of some of those it being very spread out and not able to have access to certain health resources. And so we were approached and presented an opportunity to have a funded mobile health clinic operate within Slo County for a number of years. And so now we have gotten kind of past the where should we go with it to now we operate it where we're in Paso weekly, we go to Atascadero monthly, we go to San Miguel, Oceano, and Napomo. Especially Napomo and Atascadero are frequent sites that we visit.
That sounds like a very equitable distribution of your site.
Yeah. It's taken time to identify places, and especially when we first had gotten the unit and we're kind of setting up the processes, everybody kind of looks around their area and says, hey, you guys need to be here or you should be here. I see gaps everywhere. And it's kind of more so of like, where is some place that it's reoccurring? People are able to build trust in those locations. Like in El Paso, we've been there for a number of years, first inside a building, and now we're just outside of where we used to operate with the mobile clinic. And we have a lot of community trust there. And because of that, we have patients willing to come up, schedule. And so we found out that just regularity is more important than trying to be strategic, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Sloan Knorr has this really great reputation of being inclusive and accessible for people, including our most vulnerable populations in Sloan County. And I wanted to ask, what values or goals drive that commitment for Sloan Knorr Foundation?
I think everybody kind of stems from a similar journey that I had with, either experiencing a gap in healthcare or having somebody close to them experience a gap and really having a passion and a fire to pull from when delivering the services we do. Our founding CEO or our founding or a boss, Dr. Iman Orstani, he's not our actual boss. He's an ER doc from Dignity Health, but he kind of really, really fueled and started Sloan Knorr with coming here initially and seeing the gaps, and especially working in the emergency room, right, of having people that are going to the ER for things that could be easily treated by preventative, healthcare like the kind that Sloan Knorr delivers. And so he really instilled and got on under, he kicked the bee's nest, basically, the beehive, right? And really wanted everybody to get excited about this. And so he and his goal was really just nobody should be without having access to at least preventative healthcare, if not all healthcare, right?
Yeah. And is that done by partnerships in the community? Are there more players in the grand picture of the Sloan Knorr Foundation?
Yeah. No, I think the number one driver of the quality of healthcare and the kind of the services we're able to deliver in Sloan County is our volunteers. We're a very much volunteer-driven organization. We have a number of providers who have served Sloan County for their entire career and after retirement still feel like they need to continue to deliver and especially give back to those who are in most in need. Mm-hmm. And so we have the backbone of our organization is people who are selflessly showing up, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, providing free specialty, primary, dental, vision, all kinds of services to patients without any kind of they don't need anything from them aside from them just showing up and wanting to be helped.
Yeah, and how is that able to happen in terms of operating mobily with a clinic?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for getting the mobile off the ground was the ARPA funding from the county. Mm-hmm. That was the big, we got a financial stability to both launch and then operate, get the working model for the program. And so with that, then we really found out that it's, the mobile clinics could get very complicated with more. And so we found a way, and I mean, this is kind of organization as a whole, we operate with very low margins, very lean. We just are able to all of our resources are put towards patient care and patient outcomes. And so with that, we have a nurse practitioner and a medical assistant who are able, to deliver really comprehensive primary services, as well as a custom built box truck that is a primary care office with point of care diagnostics, vitals. We have posters for nutrition in both English and Spanish all over the place. We're very much we try to go for both positive outcomes as well as cultural competency and really being able to have anybody walk into our clinic and get treated regardless of where they're from, what language they speak, or what their need may be. Outside of emergencies, we do not do emergent care yet on the mobile clinic.
Gotcha. Well, shout out to you, your team, and Sloan Knorr for doing such incredible work.
Thank you.
You've been there for some time, over a year.
Yes.
In this role. What are some of those memorable moments that you've made working in community-based healthcare?
A lot of just morning. Everybody's in jackets having a conversation about how their day's going, right? Just being out in the community for we're operating twice a week right now, three times a week when we offer a phlebotomy clinic once a month in Paso. It's really, though, just having people walk up, kind of ask what we're doing, or they're one of our patients. Just, I get to check in with them because we get to come back to our site so frequently that I get to do a little coffee and chat right, with patients. And so when we're both starting our day, right, I'm going to be with the mobile clinic, but they're going to, you know, be able to get their primary care and then go back out to, you know, a lot of them are butchers or ranchers, or they work in ag, or, you know, all walks, right? A lot of different places, but I get to hear about, you know, how they're feeling about their day before and after, you know, being able to take care of something that's been on their checklist, right? I think everybody's got one healthcare item on their checklist one way or another, right? Yeah. So it's cool to see that we can help check that box for them, and then they can go start their day.
And what like do you do for yourself to maintain the connection to your work, your motivation? How do you maintain that to continue to come back and do such great work?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's just good team, right? Making sure that my team is being taken care of, making sure, you know, I help David Perra, our executive director, kind of keep the organization together as well. I mean, you know, delivering free healthcare it's really easy to become a selfless endeavor just because there's need everywhere. And so you feel like if you have the capacity to give, you should give, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think finding the ways to do that well is not taking away from the core that you need to kind of do everything else in life, right?
Right.
And so I think just priorities, good team, good sleep.
Good sleep. Yeah really important.
Extracurriculars, for sure.
And is there any coverage or new coverage or areas that the mobile health clinic is looking to expand?
Yeah, I think we have a really good working model, as I've said, with the kind of some of the sites within Slo County we have identified. I think we would love to be able to connect the Santa Maria area more routinely. We have we're partnered with Cal Poly, and they operate a women's mobile health clinic in Guadalupe and Santa Maria in like northern Santa Barbara area. And so we always will help them, but also kind of figuring out like where should we be to really meet needs, especially as the landscape is changing with potential healthcare cuts coming, as well as just, you know, we've really seen with the introduction of the mobile health clinic, because we still operate our main brick and mortar clinic Monday through Thursday, and that does a lot of the backbone of Slo-Nor work as well.
Yeah.
And but we've seen that with increased access to our services, we haven't seen a decline in usage. We've seen an increase in usage and an increase in need.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it's not been something where we're people are in need, and they, you know, when it's easier to access, it doesn't mean that that need's going to go down. It's just going to show that that we're delivering on what we wanted to deliver on with the mobile clinic.
To join in and ask a question of our guests, you can call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. I'm Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices, our guest today is Ted Malpass, manager of their mobile health clinic. And I wanted to sort of bring us back into talking about our current environment in terms of healthcare costs and insurance and things like that. So there's these rising healthcare costs and cuts to vital public health insurance programs like Medi-Cal coming up. Organizations like the Slo-Nor Foundation are stepping up to fill these critical gaps for our community. And I wanted to know how mobile health services fit in this sort of grand scheme of things when it comes to people potentially not having insurance, or going from having insurance to either subsidized or private to not having insurance.
Yeah, no, it's a very pertinent question currently. I think in the Slo-Nor, it's not just the mobile, it's all of our services, right? I think the mobile clinic is a great tool to get people who haven't had exposure or opportunity to get into our healthcare pipeline, to get you know, we've had patients who haven't had a primary care visit in 20 years, right? And have been living here for 2 or 3 decades, working here, and just have not had the tools or the opportunity to be seen by a doctor, right? Whereas most of us don't really think about that. And that is something that I really try to communicate to people when we're talking about this, is that, you know, do you wake up in the morning and just don't take for granted that if you can go and be seen by a doctor, get referred to a specialist, then go to your dentist, and then have all of these things, and not really think about what you would do without having a way to access them. And so with the way that current events have been going with, you know, the Governor Newsom is going to be cutting Medi-Cal and not letting or not allowing anybody with that is undocumented to enroll starting January 2026. And patients who are currently enrolled without a Social Security number are going to have to pay a fee. I think it's $30 per month starting January 6th to retain their Medi-Cal coverage. And so with that coming, we're going to absolutely see an uptick in the need for accessible healthcare services without any kind of screening, or we don't collect any information on immigration status. That's not important to our doctors. It's not important to their the patient's health outcomes, right? And right. So we're expecting that again, it's with an increase in our resources or our services made available. The need is not going to go down. We're going to have people utilizing us more, and we're able to accomplish more with having a mobile clinic. But it's also we are trying to really look at, like, how are we going to give everybody as much healthcare that's going to be needed, right? Is all of the appointments, right, without having to have a wait list, without having to take time to be stuck by red tape trying to access Lenore resources. So that's something we're really trying to get a hold on before the ability to get insurance starting next year becomes harder.
Yeah. And can you walk us through how someone might be able to schedule an appointment or get in touch with the clinic if they need support?
Yeah. And I don't know if I've gone over the services in depth that Lenore provides.
Oh,
and so, yeah, we're a primary care clinic that also is able to provide dental, vision, and vision healthcare services. And so what that means is primary care is we manage chronic diseases. You're able to establish with the primary care provider. And I think that's like one of the most important things that you could do, when having opportunity to get healthcare is having a primary care provider isn't just, you get tests, you get labs, you look at the numbers and then you're done, right? It's very much a rapport with somebody who is knowledgeable and wanting to help and wanting to understand the problems that exists in your life with your physical and mental and total health, right? And so they're very much advocates. We will be able to provide laboratory testing. We do point of care diagnostics like an A1C, vitals. And then we can help work you up depending on your, diagnosis. We do a lot of partnerships with different healthcare providers locally, right? A lot of our specialty healthcare providers will give Lenore patients a major discount, see them for free for certain procedures, help them get enrolled in kind of state programs. Like one of them's for cancer, where you can get some, very discounted cancer treatment, right? That's something that could be very expensive and non-accessible for patients without insurance. And so we're able to benefit a lot from the work that other community members in SLO County do to ensure that there are the gaps that exist don't grow any bigger and leave people very like stranded when they have something that's very, that's either life-threatening or debilitating or just, prohibiting them from getting a life they deserve.
Right. And for these services that you mentioned, who qualifies for them?
So anybody without health insurance qualifies for Lenore. So this could be somebody who, lost their job, didn't have a safety net insurance, and then had to wait to get on the ACA-covered California market until the next enrollment date. And so we've worked with patients like that. We also work with patients who make too much, like a lot of the agricultural workers locally will make too much to qualify for SunCal for Medi-Cal, but then they can't get a covered California plan because they either don't have a Social Security number or the cost is prohibitive. And so we see a lot of the, people willing to take a tax penalty of $900 a year, like that if you don't have health insurance, you get a tax penalty. It's $900. Whereas some of the local covered California plans are usually upwards to $300 to $400 per month. Mm-hmm. And so they'd, 3 months of health of insurance as opposed to a one-time $900 fees. For some of them, they'd rather choose that than having insurance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then when we think about this no-cost healthcare, what does that mean in practice? How are you able to sustain no-cost healthcare financially?
It's very difficult, for sure. It's very especially in the United States, I think we have recognized that we are a for-profit healthcare landscape, and the priorities in healthcare are, you know, stakeholder value, unfortunately, yeah. right? And so we do see a lot of barriers and people not understanding why, you know, why should there be free healthcare? How do you do free healthcare? I don't trust free healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. We get that a good amount. And so the reason it is free is not so much to pat ourselves on the back. It is really just to remove another barrier to somebody needing primary care. And we really look out for you know, communities. Like our funding is a mix of private philanthropy, so individual donations. Especially we have patients who, you know, want to give money back even though we don't ask it, but they'll you know, they'll try to give us money, and then also we'll have you know, grant funding, both from like local Rotaries. We love going out and speaking at Rotaries, and they'll give us a small donation. And then also through the public health department. And then we go through the National Association of Free and Charitable Clinics, AmeriCares, a bunch of other groups and mechanisms that are there for to ensure that communities like San Luis have access to a free clinic locally. Yeah.
And you mentioned barriers, and I wanted to kind of touch on that by asking you, what barriers do you see patients are facing in our community when they're trying to access healthcare?
I think the big one is there's a few. And this is something that is not new to our county. I don't think it's new to one. We have a rural designation, and so you have some people with insurance who can't see a doctor because the doctors are leaving. For our patients, it's really just not having infrastructure, like a place for them to go where it'd be like, hey, I need healthcare, where should I go, right? That place is the hospital. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the things that are presenting at the hospital aren't necessarily, you don't need to have an emergency room visit to manage diabetes, to manage, you know, an elevated blood pressure. Those kinds of things are exactly what primary care and what SLO-NOR tries to improve and work with a patient on. So that way that visit to the emergency room is mitigated or not going to happen at all, which saves everybody money. It saves taxpayer dollars money. It saves the hospital's money. It saves the physician's money. And so this is kind of the you know, preventative care model, is to work on issues that could be exacerbated, work on chronic diseases or, you know, things that come up in your day-to-day that are non-emergent, so they don't present to the emergency room, and then add to an already kind of taxed and very utilize a service like the emergency room.
Yeah. And what does this model, or what does the SLO-NOR Foundation do to address these barriers?
So with the mobile health clinic is one for sure. We make sure that all of our the working staff are bilingual. I think that's a huge one as well. We serve a significant population of Hispanic patients in mm-hmm. SLO County. We have a significant amount of trust within that community, so we're utilized. We are always working to build trust and to continue to deliver on, you know, services to anybody who is in need, right? And so, but we found that within the Hispanic community, there's a lot of more discussion between families and friends, and those family and friends will recommend SLO-NOR and be like, hey, I got really excellent, you know, I saw a doctor today and it mm-hmm. was free, and I got a glucometer, and I got to talk about diabetes, and they recommended that I do blue corn tortillas instead of white, you know, yellow mm-hmm. corn, because it's better for my blood sugars, and those kinds of things people get excited about. And so because we're able to deliver something like that, that trust is like barrier is we overcome that just from trying to relate with them and deliver comprehensive health services.
Yeah. And you mentioned bilingual. I'm interested in knowing if there's any events or special times where you do have like a indigenous language translator or like a hotline or something available for folks that don't speak Spanish or Mixteco.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for Mixteco speakers, we do. We have like a one-time contract with Herencia Indica to do like build interpretation for a Mixteco speaker. We also work with the Promotores Collaborative, and they have a Mixteco speaker on their team who goes out and does outreach, and we're working with them to pursue having a Mixteco clinic mm-hmm. Where we'd have an interpreter on site. There's all sorts of challenges that comes with that, just because you know, it's the dialects change because some people are from different regions, and the way that, you know, Western healthcare is delivered, there's maybe not a lot of vernacular that can be used in an exam room to really communicate and get consent and all of that stuff for a mixed echo speaker. And so I know the mobile clinic and some of the providers at Slonor are working and trying to find ways of, like, how do we ensure that we're being culturally competent for the population. And so that is something that we are definitely going to be supporting and looking into going into next year when the challenges become even harder for the recently immigrated working population in SLO and San Luis to get healthcare.
Yeah, and people are anticipating that to be like a big boom. Like lots of people are going to drop off of and not only that, but just research has shown that there's the trust that you're talking about when it happens at the state level and they can't trust, like, their state insurance or can't afford the $30 premium, yeah, then there might be even more folks joining that cadre of people with no healthcare insurance.
Yeah, we're definitely expecting an increase. I think the big statistic that sums it up and is got us, I don't want to say concerned, but, you know, I feel that we're all, everybody at the Slonor clinics are going to be busy going into next year, is that the Joint Economic Committee has put out a statistic that 3 million Californians could lose health insurance before 2030, right? Just with cuts both coming to Medi-Cal, coming to Medicaid, the federal Medi-Cal program, right? And so a lot of the state funding from that, as well as the trust that's been broken, right? When we've seen communications going to agencies that weren't, that shouldn't be accessing certain health information for patients, that, you know, they put trust in the state. And so it's difficult, though, when a large majority of the funding for a lot of healthcare comes from DC. And yeah. So we are, you know, again, we're, I mean, these are really excellent resources. We encourage patients to still pursue them, right? Because at the end of the day, having a Medi-Cal insurance is better than being uninsured, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And for people to access these services, yes, what does that look like? Is it like there's an announcement that is made, or where do they find out more to become a patient?
For Slonor. I think we are on social media. We work with the promotors who kind of do our door-to-door. I think the best way to find out about Slonor, though, is to call our front desk. And so our phone number is 805-439-1797. You can also visit our website, Slonor Foundation. And really, both see the way to get involved as a volunteer, as a donor, see our mission kind of printed out online. But then you can also just speak with Sandy at our front desk, who does a wonderful job of answering questions and helping patients and getting people what they need.
Thank you, Ted. We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we will be right back on Central Coast Voices.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, we go to California's Central Valley, where a controversial technology to address the climate crisis is being tested.
That's why is it that they have to put it underneath us? Why wouldn't they put this in richer neighborhoods?
That's this week on Latino USA.
On the next Fresh Air, the now classic Bruce Springsteen album Born to Run will have its 50th anniversary August 25th. It was a turning point for rock and roll and for Springsteen in his life and his songwriting. We'll talk with Peter Ames Carlin about his new book, Tonight in Jungle Land, The Making of Born to Run. Join us.
How the economy feels to a family depends a whole lot on how many mouths need feeding and how much money is coming in.
I'm now just per diem, so I go in at least 3 days a month, but now it's making me anxious.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Our series, Lived Economies, next time on Marketplace.
New Orleans native Big Frida has an instantly recognizable voice.
I'm Big Frida, the Queen Diva, your best believer.
She's known as the Queen of Bounce, but her next album is bringing her fans to church.
You know, when I said I'm doing a gospel album, they're like, holy moly, you know?
I'm Ari Shapiro, Big Frida's Pressing Onward on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's a look ahead this afternoon on our Thursday here on KCBX with Latino USA coming up at 2 o'clock following this program. That's followed by Fresh Air at 3, Marketplace at 4, and then All Things Considered from 4:30 to 6:30. Right now, let's return to Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guest on Central Coast Voices with your phone calls. Back to you, Mario.
Thank you, Brad, and welcome back to Central Coast Voices, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. Our guests today are Ted Malpas, manager of their mobile health clinic, and in this section, we'll take a closer look at the layered challenges facing SLO County residents and how the Noor Foundation is moving our community toward health equity, which is a lot of what we've been talking about together, is how SLO Noor Foundation is filling this critical gap in our community and sort of looking ahead to the future for folks who might not have a safety net. We've kind of been covering this just in based on who can access the SLO Noor Foundation, but I wanted to ask you specifically, how do race, immigration status, and language access shape the health disparities that the Noor Foundation encounters in this work?
Yeah, I think it's not a newly unique problem. I think the Noor Foundation does a great job, and myself and my team, everybody there is, we work with actual community members, actual community members, work at SLO Noor. And so they are able to really empathize and open a door for anybody locally here, right? Because they themselves, go back home to somewhere in SLO County every day, and have a lot of respect for that and pride in that. And so I think that team really is able to, coming from some of them having, built a life out in the United States as well, coming from different areas, including our founding Dr. Ahmad Nuristani, who originally immigrated from Afghanistan. That kind of idea of, opportunity, right? It's a very American thing to do, is to the land of equal opportunity, but we really try to emphasize that in the work we do. And so we make it so we have trust in the community. We do not ask for any immigration status questions, right? That's not important to the healthcare. It's not a demographic we collect, so we'll never have to report on it either, because there's nothing to report. Mm-hmm. I think coming here, right, from somewhere and having the resources that are made available in California are pretty significant for that population, because, the state at least had identified of the role that the immigrant community plays. Mm-hmm. Here, it's a huge workforce. It's a huge moving factor for a lot of the things that everybody else relies on, right, in California. Yeah. And so there's been the idea that there should be built-in systemic infrastructure to support those populations. And then we're seeing it kind of from some people from the top are stating that those things should not exist. And so, but thankfully, because some of those are within our foundation, it's really difficult to exclude them. And so, the SLO Noor Foundation has kind of done this, tried to practice the same idea that it is foundational for us to have our doors open and have equal opportunity to healthcare for anybody.
And I want to kind of pivot to more of a community perspective, like on the ground, as somebody who might be from a Latinx indigenous background, who might have a hybrid trust in Western medicine and traditional medicine. Yes. Does the SLO Noor Foundation have any reconnaissance when it comes to not relying solely on Western medicine?
Sure. Yeah, I think the way that Western medicine, at least the stigma against it, is that you're just given a med and told to take the med and you'll get better, mm-hmm. right? And that approach is not something that is necessarily indicative of all of Western medicine. I think there is just it depends on the channel that is chosen, and sometimes certain healthcare rooms and healthcare experiences are, will form an opinion. The way that a patient utilizes SLO Noor Clinic is not here, you're sick, take this. It is, how are you feeling? What can we do for you? What mm-hmm. are you looking to accomplish with your health outcomes, right? Like, what is it you're prioritizing? And so our provider is able to do this. And, the native language, at least for English and Spanish, ask those questions on the mobile clinic, and then from there really build a plan, right? So if Western medicine is something that the patient is scared of, then we will, or they have, you know, a bad opinion on, or I mean, another one is the cost, right? Mm-hmm. And so we work a lot to find, I don't want to say loopholes, but alternative means and alternative solutions for patients. And so, again, it gets tricky, right? Because you'll have things that really do need a med, right? Some chronic, you know, some diagnoses that do need meds. And, but that's why we really start with building a trust,
yeah.
Right? And so, but we, again, leave every opportunity we can available for patients to say, hey, this is how I've been doing it. This is what I'm comfortable with, you know, treating this, right? But thankfully, at least in primary care, a good amount of work can be done just from dietary changes, right? And not from a cultural diet. You can really just, you know, choose to be more conscientious of your diet, no matter what cuisine you're consuming. Mm-hmm. You can really do a lot of good by just being conscious of that and having recommendations. And then, and then exercise and sleep, right? Those are huge factors.
Yeah. I remember I had a primary care provider about a couple of years ago that had prescribed my husband and I hugs, you know,
like yeah.
something as relational as that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the practice is holistic as it is much, very under a microscope, right? You have it go hand in hand. And I think, the kind of providers that the NOR Clinic is able to retain and recruit and retain, are people who care about people, yeah. Right? They're not, med freaks. I mean, and again, it's nothing wrong with that, right? That's some progress is made from critical study, but I think that, you have to be a certain kind of person, a very caring and empathetic person to do the work that we do.
Yeah. And another community-based question is thinking about what are the consequences when people delay or go without care due to cost or fear of immigration enforcement?
Yeah, it gets really ugly just because, I mean, it's very similar to what happened during COVID when the ER rooms were swamped and you had the stigma kind of ruling the pursuit of healthcare. And so that kind of narrative continuing now is really unfortunate. And as you know, the primary care preventative care idea of stopping something before it gets worse is very much exacerbated when you have people who are scared of whether it's running into immigration enforcement, whether it is not getting insurance, right? Those factors will increase the cost of healthcare for everybody, right? And that's kind of the underlying problem is that when we see cuts to a certain group's healthcare, it's not like those people, at least the way that the system works now, are going to leave. They're going to have to utilize what's available to them, right? And so without having access to a primary care provider with insurance, then they're going to put off things until they go to the emergency room because they're in such pain or, you know, something were to happen. And because of that visit, somebody else, you know, that can't be reimbursed by insurance, then that cost will have to be recouped mm-hmm. From the other consumers in the market, right? And so that is kind of the fears and the idea is that, you know, excluding one group from, you know, health insurance isn't going to reduce the cost for everybody else. It more than likely will increase the cost for healthcare to all healthcare consumers.
Wow. Yeah, that's just so unfortunate. I mean, just thinking about people who aren't going to be able to access these services or that will need to, right?
Like, yes.
I still, I guess I'm just stuck on thinking about how this climate is going to influence people's decision making when it comes to delaying care. I mean, I was having a conversation with some family about, you know, some people go to Mexico to get their yes. their healthcare needs met because it's too expensive in the U.S. But now there is sort of this air of fear of like, well, how are we going to do that now?
Yeah.
And so I guess that's my question is like, what do we? What do we see on the ground with patients who say things like that, who are like, I'm delaying yeah. care until I go back home?
Yes. Yeah, I think I really have enjoyed my time working with the population that Slonor helps, right? Because you get some really savvy and really, you know, gritty people who have done a lot to be able to both provide for either them or their family, you know, quality of life that they deserve. And so, you know, I myself have actually gone, I grew up down south and, you know, the cost of insulin, used to be about $600 to $700 a month without insurance. And so I myself went to Tijuana and went to a pharmacy and picked up insulin for $40. When I, you know, my mom lost her job and I lost insurance because of that. And so that is something that we hear all the time from patients, right? It's something that you hear all the time talking with type 1 diabetics. It's kind of indicative, at least the ones that live in Southern California. And so, but you see a lot of some really interesting, like, just experiences and paths that people have taken. And so, and it's really a shame, too, that you have to, you know, we have one patient who can't get a cast removed because he got, you know, he broke a leg in Mexico, came back here, doesn't have insurance, isn't able to establish with the PCP because the cast and the surgery was done in Mexico. And because, you know, he's coming back and forth, he's going to have to go back to Mexico to get the cast removed. And that's something that, you know, you don't really think about of like, if you got a cast while traveling abroad, you would absolutely just come back here and get it off and it wouldn't be a problem. You wouldn't have to go back to Greece or you wouldn't have to go back to Italy to do something. And so trying to, you know, have situations like that, I think that's the idea is that healthcare isn't a black and white thing, right? And so gray hallways exist and we try our best to keep it outcome focused, mm-hmm. right? But yeah, hearing some of the stories of patients it's pretty phenomenal the level of discomfort and chronic, you know, pain that people can deal with daily just because they don't know where to go to get help.
Yeah. And you said healthcare is not black and white. Like there's so many different ways to engage with healthcare. Yes. And one of those ways is through mobilization and advocacy, yes. especially at the health policy level. And so I wanted to ask you, are there any areas of policy or funding that you'd like to see change to improve how the most underserved get to remove barriers from underserved people who are seeking care?
I think there's only a one good answer, and it's a single payer system or universal healthcare, right? That would be the end goal, right? And you know, as sad as it would be to see SloNorc go, I think our organization shouldn't have to exist, but there shouldn't be any gaps in healthcare for people who live here, right?
Yeah.
But I think outside of that, I would like to see just the ability for more healthcare workers to get in. To this place, to get into SLO and just rural places and places in general, right? The the barriers to education, to the cost of you know, getting your license for any kind of practice is just, it's very prohibitive. And so I think seeing a way to get more healthcare workforce out there and also trained in just being, I use the term culturally competent, but being able to really deliver to all populations, right?
Yeah. How do you train staff and volunteers to approach this work through that culturally competence lens or like this, the work that you do?
You'll like this one. I know you're a professor at Cuesta, but we partner with College Corps and we get a lot of like nursing students and students in the nursing program who volunteer and will be medical assistants for us. And those students are they kick butt. They're really good. And so some of our externs are very good. You know, thankfully with SloNorc, we don't really have to train people. People who are motivated and do the work that we do, like when they come to us, there's not training. It's more of like, hey, I, you know, went to school to treat this population. I have been working with this population for a long time. This is the place that I saw where people are working with at risk, you know, whether it's because they have language barriers, whether it's because they have income barriers, you know, geography barriers, right? Like I you know, people see issues and they want to try to fix them, right? And so we get a bunch of wonderful staff who will come and volunteers, right, who work with these populations. That was their focus: at risk, critical, you know, not the easy walk-in ones, right? And
yeah.
So and they do a great job.
Awesome. I mean, I've heard of our NRAD program using things like the social determinants of health in their classrooms and things like that. So it's good to know that they're coming into these roles with a goal in mind of serving the community compassionately and through a lens of equity.
Of course.
I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you will find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find this episode and all our past shows by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcasts. You can learn more about the Slow Noor Foundation at their website, www.slownoorfoundation.org, especially if you're interested in becoming a volunteer. You can also visit them on Facebook or Instagram at Slow Noor Foundation. To schedule an appointment or to donate at the Noor Clinic, please call 805-439-1797. We're getting close to the end of our time here, Ted, and I just want to consider how our listeners can put what we've discussed into action today. And so one of those questions is, how can people start the work of the Slow Noor Foundation or support the work?
Yeah, to start it, I mean, you know, you can ask your neighbors or your friends or your family how you're doing. Do you have health insurance? Do you want to get free healthcare if you do not have health insurance? Or do you want to have this information in your back pocket in case you are in between insurances for one point in your life, right? Or, oh my God, I love the idea of helping our community. How can I support more, right? And so all of those questions, if you ask yourself that and you live in Slo County, you should check out Noor. Call our number, go to our website. You know, donors are great, volunteers are great, patients—that's the main one. If you know anybody who's in need, make sure that they find out who we are.
Yeah, and if they do have these discussions with their friends or their neighbors or family members, what should people know if they're going to refer somebody to the Noor Foundation?
I think the first thing is make sure that they're not suffering from something where they need to go to the emergency room. Again, that's a big one. We're non-emergent, so we are primary care only. And so with that, though, we really try our best to meet the need. And so let the person that you're talking to that might need Slo Noor resources say, hey, do you have issues with your teeth? Do you want glasses? Do you know if you need glasses? When was the last time you've spoken with a doctor? When mm-hmm. is the last time you've gone into a doctor's office, right? Those kinds of things. And that we don't have any wait lists right now. We can get you in very quickly. We do prefer that you call and schedule an appointment beforehand, though. And so I think that is usually the first thing I would tell people is to give them this number and then check with your inquiry. So,
yeah. And in the case that maybe somebody's children lapses on their insurance or they're not able to access Medi-Cal or Medicaid or something like that, does the Slo Noor Foundation or clinic, do they offer pediatric services?
No. So as of right now, we do not offer pediatric services just because we don't have any volunteering pediatricians. And at least in California, every child under the age of 18 can get Medi-Cal mm-hmm. Pretty reliably. As that changes, we'll kind of see. You know, but as of right now, I think the best thing, and this is the same thing with the unhoused population, right? This is one where people saw the mobile health clinic and thought we would be able to solve that issue. And again, unhoused is a mix of mental substance, so many different issues. And so with the resources needed to be able to comprehensively treat that is not something that Slo Noor has currently. And the same thing is true with children. And so for them, I would get them in Medi-Cal for sure.
Yeah. And are there any campaigns that the Slo Noor Foundation is a part of right now or is encouraging in our community?
I think, just a general consciousness of you know, who is at risk. We've been doing kind of an attempt to try to get people to understand, you know, who are the uninsured? How does somebody become uninsured within Slo County? It is not something that is usually done by choice mm-hmm. and is not something that is this enigma, right? Within the Slo County, I think a lot of people are put in hard positions or they just don't realize, that they can't get access to these resources. And so, yeah, I think that's one. And so I think people should think about, you know, why would somebody not have a health insurance or why would somebody more broadly, you know, what if you were to not have access to certain resources? Like, what would you do?
Yeah. Yeah. And what's one action that you would hope our listeners will take after hearing our conversation today?
sharing our phone number for sure to anybody who may need it. That's again 805-439-1797. I think also just not taking anybody's healthcare journey for granted, including your own, right? It's a complicated system, and so I think to our Spanish patients, we usually say poco a poco, right? Mm-hmm. Little by little. And I think that is a really good mindset to come into it. And so whether that's yourself or your loved one, just, know that it's bit by bit.
And how powerful would you say people's voices are in terms of advocating for their healthcare or a loved one?
Immensely, right? A lot of our, at least just working in Slow Norm, a lot of our patients get scheduled. We hear their whole story and everything else, not from the patient themselves, but a loved one. And so make sure, I think, in healthcare as it is in SLO County with, how difficult it may be sometimes to get in, whether it's primary, dental, vision, all of those things, with SLO NOR, outside of SLO NOR, just advocate. Make sure you are advocating for yourself or advocating for somebody who cannot advocate, right? And that's how I had to do it for my health. That's how everybody, unless you're got the golden spoon or golden ticket, right? Mm-hmm. Just everyday persistence is really the only way to be able to get what you need in the healthcare landscape.
Yeah. And I know that there are student listeners out there listening to our show right now. And so I wanted to ask also, what would you advise people who are looking to go into this field of work?
The same idea, advocacy and mm-hmm. persistence, of course. No, I think people who land in this field are here for a reason. And so don't feel like you have to wake up in the morning and have any kind of imposter syndrome or ask yourself why you're doing it. You are there for a reason, and you will do good by pursuing this field, and just whatever that's good for yourself, your family, your friends, right? And so just take that in mind and study a lot. Office hours.
Office hours for sure. Are there more resources for folks that we haven't touched on yet that the SLO NOR is privy to?
I think know that being in SLO County, there are a lot of people who do a lot of good. We are one group who does that. There are numerous nonprofits, as well as the community health centers of the Central Coast, Dignity, French, all the hospitals. There are people in there who really care, who are really trying to do good. And so I think just feel lucky that you are here, and that this is a community focused place. And so if you aren't getting out in the community, try to do a little bit, right? Because if you are ever in need, I know there are people there that would show up.
Yeah. Earlier in the show, you mentioned that we have a rural designation.
Yes.
Can you mention just a little bit more, like, what does that mean for us and the SLO NOR Foundation?
Yeah. For SLO NOR, it isn't as impactful because we don't bill insurance at all. We don't bill anybody, right? Our services are totally funded through our donors, our partnerships with the county, with different organizations. And so the rural designation is a what the Medicare and Medicaid programs, that's what providers, right, are able to get reimbursed at a flat rate. And the rural designations means that the providers locally get a smaller reimbursement. And that's why we're seeing even now that some Medicare providers are choosing not to accept Medicare because they want and they're going in what's called concierge, cash pay kind of situation, because they're not making enough to either pay off their loans, afford the cost of living as a provider in SLO County to operate. Right. And so this rural designation is something that I know people in the public health department are working on. I know the board of supervisors, but it is something where, I would, of course, write your elected officials, try to change that. But it is something that will continue to be a detrimental aspect of trying to access healthcare here, is that we are a smaller place and less people means less money for healthcare. So there's less incentive to be able to treat the people who need it here. And yeah.
And anything else that you'd like to share that we haven't covered yet? I know that there's so much to talk about, and we can have many different series just based on the work that you do, but anything that you'd like to share with our guests?
Again, if you'd like to become a patient, know anybody who needs to become a patient, or would just like to find out more about SLO NOR Foundation Health Clinics, please call us at 805-439-1797. Dr. Mario, thank you very much for having me today. It's been a great privilege to do the work, and I think that's something that everybody at Sonor Foundation feels, that it's our privilege to do the work that we do.
Thank you, Ted, and thanks for joining us today. And just to everyone listening today, if you haven't checked in on your loved ones, especially when it comes to their healthcare, please do so. It's literally a text message or a phone call away. I know that that's something that we can all work on in terms of our practice and community with our family and our friends and our loved ones. So if you haven't already checked in on them and to see how they're doing in terms of their mental health, their emotional health, their physical health, please do so. Now you know that if they don't have insurance and they're looking to see some primary care services, they can access the NOR Foundation by calling 805-439-1797. Thank you so much for joining us today again, Ted. We hope that you'll tune in to us next time for Central Coast Voices on Thursday, August 14th at 1 p.m. with host Fred Monroe and his guests from Welcome Home Village. Central Coast Voices is co-produced by the show's host in collaboration with KCBX. We do depend on folks like you to continue these programs, so please donate today or become a recurring donor by becoming a member with your monthly donation online at www.kcbx.org. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik. Thanks for joining us today.